Random House Audio presents Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Wild Space by Karen Miller. Read for you by Jeff Gerner. Chapter 1. Then, the Battle of Geonosis. Aftermath. Geonosis, harsh red planet. Dust and rock and pitiless heat. Wind and sand and a sky full of shards. Tenacious life, capricious death. All moist green beauty long burned away. No second chances here. No soft place to fall. Secrets and sedition and singular minds. Ambition and gluttony and a hunger for death. Refuge for some, graveyard for others. Blood of the Republic seeping into dry soil. Faint on the ceaseless wind, sorrow and grief. Gathered in the arena, a weeping of Jedi. Who wept their tears on the inside, where they would not be seen. To weep for a fallen comrade was to display unseemly attachment. A Jedi did not become attached to people, to things, to places, to any world or its inhabitants. A Jedi's strength was fed by serenity, by distance, by loving impersonally. At least, that was the ideal. Weary and heartsore, Yoda stood in silence with his fellow master and friend Mace Windu, watching as efficient clone troopers swiftly, methodically, and not unkindly loaded the last of the slain Jedi onto repulsor lift pallets, then pushed them one-handed out of Poggle the Lesser's brutal arena to the Republic transport ships waiting beyond its high walls. They were supervised by those few Jedi who had survived the slaughter and the military engagement that followed it, and who were not as serenely detached as Temple philosophy might dictate. The Battle of Geonosis was over. The Separatist droid army dealt a crushing setback. But its leader, Count Dooku, had fled. The traitor, and his underlings from the Trade Federation, the Techno Union, the Commerce Guild, the Intergalactic Banking Clan, the Hypercommunications Cartel, and the Corporate Alliance had fled also to safety. Fled so they might continue to plot the downfall of the galaxy's great achievement, its Republic. I do not regret coming here, said Mace, his dark face darkened further by shadows. We've dealt a serious blow to our enemy, and in doing so we've seen what this clone army is capable of. That's useful. But Yoda, we have paid a heavier price than I imagined, or foresaw. Yoda nodded, his gnarled fingers tight about his ancient gimmer stick.
The truth you speak, Master Windu. Nothing gained there is without some loss also to balance the scales.
He breathed out slowly, a long, heavy sigh.
Foolish indeed would we be to think we might escape such a confrontation unscathed. But this loss the Temple will find difficult to overcome. Into Jedi knighthood too soon must we thrust our oldest Padawans, I fear.
Padawans like Anakin Skywalker, so bright, so reckless, and now so hurt. On his way back to Coruscant already with Obi-Wan and the determined, brave, and equally reckless young senator from Naboo.
Trouble for him, Yoda thought. And for her, I sense. If only clearly could I see, but a shroud the dark side is. In smothering folds it wraps us all.
What? Said Mace, frowning, sensing his disquiet, as he always did. Yoda, what's wrong? Talia Moonseeker, a young Argaon only 4 months into her Jedi knighthood, was kneeling beside her fallen former master, Vaytu, head bowed. With an effort, Yoda pulled his gaze away from her grief, away from the monstrous arena, still searing in the daylight. A Geonosis day lasted so long. There were yet many hours before the sun would set on this stark vista.
Answer you plainly, I cannot, Master Windu, he replied heavily. Time for meditation I require.
Then you should return to the temple, said Mace. I can oversee the cleanup operation here. You are our only beacon in the darkness, Yoda. Without your wisdom and foresight, I doubt we can prevail. He meant the words kindly, a declaration of confidence, but Yoda felt the weight of them settle into his bones with a cruel finality.
Too old am I to be the last hope of the Jedi,
Yoda thought to himself. He watched as Talia Moonseeker withdrew to a discreet distance so the body of her slain former master might be decently carried from the arena by the tireless clones who had fought this day and died this day, so utterly single-minded and fearless that he thought of droids, not men, droids of flesh and blood, bred and drilled to be perfectly disciplined, perfectly lethal, bred to die so the people of the Republic might live. Commissioned under the most mysterious circumstances, the truth of which might never be unraveled. Remembering the Kaminoan cloning facility, its bright white sterility, its impersonal care for the creatures it created so efficiently, so remarkably, so wholly without compunction, he repressed a shudder.
Deep questions of morality and ethics do these clones raise, Yoda thought. But answers, are there? No, that I do not. Override ethics, our desperate need for them might.
Mace dropped to one knee. Is it Dooku, Yoda? Is he what's troubling you? Bitter pain, prickling deeply. Dooku. Yoda thrust the name, the shock, aside. There would be time later to think of that fallen man.
To the temple I shall now return, Master Windu. Follow me as soon as you can. Important matters there are for the council to discuss.
Accepting the gentle rebuff, Mace stood. Travel safely, Yoda. I'll see you on Coruscant once matters here are properly concluded. With an abrupt snap of his fingers, he summoned a nearby clone trooper. Master Yoda is returning to Coruscant. He requires an escort to his ship. The trooper nodded.
Yes, sir.
Watching the lethal asteroid belt fall away behind them, watching harsh red Geonosis smear and streak as the ship's hyperdrive kicked in, Yoda released the lingering grief of the recent past in another long, slow sigh. Grief was but a signifier of attachment. It had no useful purpose to serve. If he was to serve the light, as was his purpose, then must he rediscover that perfectly poised place within himself, whereupon he could stand and know he stood upon firm ground. For once he reached Coruscant, the hard work of saving the Republic would truly begin. The Jedi Temple's halls of healing were beautiful. They had lofty ceilings and enormous windows that spilled golden light over the blue and green and rose-pink walls and floor. Imbued with the Force's most gentle aspects, with love and nurturing and peace, they were full of perfumed flowers and green growing things, with the music of running water and the vibrancy of life renewed. They were the perfect retreat for those who were broken in body and mind, a place where the ugliness of suffering was washed away. Oblivious to the serenity around her, Padme glared at the elderly, elegant Twi'lek Jedi healer standing in her way.
I don't need long, Master Vokara Che. Just a few moments, but I really do need to see Anakin Skywalker.
Twin headtails gently twitching, the Twi'lek clasped her hands before her.
I am sorry, Senator Amidala, but that's not possible.
Her voice had that familiar Twi'lek huskiness. But her basic was flawless.
Anakin is gravely injured. He has been placed in a deep healing trance and cannot be disturbed.
Yes, I know he's gravely injured. I just traveled back from Geonosis with him.
Padme gestured at her ruined white bodysuit, heedless of the hot pain any movement caused.
See here, Madam Jedi? This is his blood. Trust me, I know exactly how badly he's been hurt.
To underscore that claim, she could show the temple's senior healer her crushed and bone-bruised hand, the hand Anakin had clung to as the waves of agony from his monstrous wounding burned through him without cease or mercy.
But I'd better not, she thought. He isn't supposed to be holding anyone's hand, least of all mine. It's bad enough that Obi-Wan was a witness.
The Jedi healer shook her head.
Senator! You are injured yourself. Let us help you.
Don't worry about me, Padme said, impatient. I'm barely scratched, and anyway, I'm not in pain.
Vokara Che gave her a reproving look.
Senator, do not think you can hoodwink me. I'm not even touching you, and I can feel your discomfort.
Her head fell back, and her eyes drifted closed.
Some kind of creature attacked you, yes? And you fell from a great height. There is head pain. Your ribs are bruised, so is your spine. It's a wonder no bones were broken.
The Twi'lek's eyes opened, her cool gaze uncompromising.
Shall I continue?
Aching from head to toe, the Nexu's claw marks across her back burning, her battered ribs throbbing with every breath, Padme gritted her teeth.
There is nothing wrong with me that 5 minutes with Anakin won't fix. Master Vokara Che, you don't understand. I really must see him. Anakin's my bodyguard, my responsibility.
Then she thought to herself,
and this is my fault. I bullied him into going to Geonosis, and he nearly died. So if you think I'm abandoning him now...
Anakin Skywalker is not your responsibility,
the Jedi healer said sharply.
He is a Jedi, and he is safely home among his fellow Jedi who know precisely what to do for him. Please, let us treat you so you might leave the temple in good order.
A faint hint of censure crept into the Twi'lek's eyes.
Indeed, I must point out that it's not entirely proper for you to be here, for you to...
And where else should I be?
Padme demanded, not caring that her raised voice was attracting the attention of three apprentice healers scurrying about their mysterious Jedi business. Not caring that she was perilously close to making a scene, behaving in a manner unbecoming to a former queen of Naboo, a member of the Galactic Senate, a politician with a very public face.
I am not leaving this place before they let me see him, she thought.
Vokara Che's expression hardened.
If you're not comfortable with receiving Jedi treatment, Senator, I can see you escorted to a med center, or...
You're not escorting me anywhere! I want...
Padme, said a quiet voice behind her. Master Vokara Che hurried forward.
Master Kenobi, what are you doing?
Heart thudding, Padme turned.
Obi-Wan.
Still in his slashed and burned Jedi tunic, unhealed as yet, standing with difficulty in the doorway of a small chamber, clinging to its framework so he didn't fall down. His face was pale, his eyes were darkened with fatigue and pain and something else.
She thought, despair? No, it can't be. Jedi don't feel things like that, at least not this Jedi.
I'm sorry, Vokara Che, he said quietly, but I need a moment alone with the Senator.
I don't think that's wise,
said the Jedi healer, one hand clasping his shoulder, unrepentantly aggravated.
You are a whisper away from collapse, Obi-Wan. I don't understand it. You should have been healed by now. I expressly sent...
And I sent her away, said Obi-Wan, apologetic. I'd rather not be sunk in a healing trance until I've seen my Padawan.
You're as bad as she is,
Vokara Che clicked her tongue.
Very well, you have a moment.
Padme watched the healer withdraw, then looked again at Obi-Wan. After a moment's hesitation, she approached him, feeling suddenly young and gauche, like a childish apprentice. She tilted her chin.
Vokara Che's right. You look awful.
Do you truly think you're helping Anakin? Said Obi-Wan. His voice was tight, his eyes were glazed. You're not. You don't belong here, Padme. Let them treat you, then go home, before Yoda returns. Before things get... complicated.
She stared at him, shocked.
She wanted to shout at him. She wanted to weep. Instead, she turned to leave. What else could she do? Upon his return to Coruscant, Yoda put duty first. Instead of going straight to the temple's halls of healing, he answered a peremptory summons from the office of the Supreme Chancellor. Naboo's former senator was clearly anxious to hear firsthand of Geonosis. The language used was barely couched in the protocols accepted and expected for such communications. It wasn't a meeting he anticipated with any kind of pleasure. More and more of late, it seemed the Jedi were being drawn into politics, into matters of legislation and legalese that had never been their province. The Jedi were sworn to uphold the Republic and protect its ideals, not entangle themselves in the fortunes of any one chancellor. Political careers were not their affair. Personalities were supposed to be irrelevant. But somehow, Palpatine was changing that. Not by being a bully or imposing his will, quite the opposite. He was constantly resisting the Senate's eagerness for him to assume more and more executive powers. He resisted, the Senate insisted, so reluctantly Palpatine agreed. And every time he acquiesced to its requests, he turned once more to the Jedi for advice. It was hardly an ideal situation. The Jedi Council was not just another branch of the executive office. But how, in good conscience, could it refuse to aid a man who so humbly petitioned for their assistance? A man who championed them in the Senate at every opportunity, who had worked tirelessly for peace since assuming the highest political office in the galaxy, and was now faced with the daunting, terrifying task of keeping their vast republic intact. How could the Jedi Council turn its back on such a man? Clearly, it couldn't. Clearly, in the face of these extraordinary times, the Jedi must set aside their traditions and come to the aid of the man a galaxy looked to as its savior. But that didn't mean they had to be happy about it. With his ship safely docked at the temple's private spaceport, Yoda transferred to an air shuttle that would see him speedily delivered to the senatorial complex. His Padawan pilot, Tassili, acknowledged him respectfully, but had the good sense not to talk as he guided the shuttle into the ceaseless slipstreams of Coruscant air traffic and headed for the sprawling Senate district. They reached the sector without incident. Directly ahead of them, the Senate building gleamed mellow silver beneath Coruscant's sun. Cradle and crucible of democracy, it stood as a symbol of all that was right and good in the galaxy. Born in the Republic's early years, able to remember, vividly, its growing pains and minor upheavals, Yoda treasured that symbol and all it represented, as he treasured his beloved Jedi Order.
"But now does the silver show a touch of tarnish?" he thought. "Never before in galactic history has democracy trembled as it trembles now."
It was a sickening thought. Not once had he dreamed he might witness the fall of this grand galactic republic. All things died, that was true. Yet somehow he'd imagined the republic would be spared, believed that it would evolve, transmute, reinvent itself, continue. The Jedi were oath-sworn to see that it did. They were dying now to keep that sacred oath. No sacrifice would be too great to ensure the survival of peace and the republic. It was unthinkable that those sacrifices might be in vain. The air shuttle's transponder beeped as the Senate control tower's automatic guidance system locked on to their signal and took over the business of piloting them to their assigned landing platform and dock space. It was a new security measure, implemented by Palpatine in a response to the Separatists' increased bellicosity on planets less vigorously defended and patrolled than Coruscant. Not everyone was pleased by the move, claiming a curtailment of civic freedoms.
"Trying hard, Palpatine is, to keep us safe and free at the same time. An easy road to walk, it is not."
As their shuttle was swallowed by the Senate building's cavernous docking complex, joining a long line of other entering craft, the Padawan Tassili cleared his throat, and his red head scales brightened to scarlet, a sign of Hasekian anxiety.
"Master Yoda," he said, hesitant.
"Speak, Padawan."
"There is rumor at the temple, much death on Geonosis."
Yoda sighed. It was only to be expected with the injured returning home.
"Not rumor, Padawan, but fact."
Tassili's head scales blanched white.
"I was told, Master Kenobi, Anakin..."
"Not dead they are, but injured."
"Oh..."
Tassili's voice was a horrified whisper. Yoda frowned. It was not the Jedi way to laud one Jedi Knight above another, call one apprentice greater than the next. But in the case of Obi-Wan and Anakin, accepted practice simply did not apply. Anakin Skywalker was proclaimed a child of prophecy. Obi-Wan was his master, his reputation formidable. Together, they appeared invincible. Or they had, until Geonosis. But he couldn't afford to think of that now.
Die they will not, Padawan,
he told Tassili firmly.
Gossip about them, you will not. Hmm?
No, Master Yoda, said Tassili, chastened.
Their shuttle slid smoothly into its allotted docking bay. All around them, as far as the keenest sight reached, other shuttles docked and undocked, carrying out the endless business of the Republic. Yoda dismissed Tassili back to the temple, then entered the bowels of the Senate complex and made his way through the bewildering maze of swift tubes and corridors to its administration quarter and Supreme Chancellor Palpatine's executive suite. As usual, its crimson opulence threatened to oppress. An unexpected choice of color scheme for such a humble man. Palpatine had laughed about it, embarrassed.
When I think of my new responsibilities, I grow cold with fear, he'd said. Red grants me the illusion that I am warm.
Senator Bail Organa of Alderaan was waiting in Palpatine's otherwise empty office antechamber. He was dressed not in his usual lavish attire, but in a plain, dark-hued tunic and trousers of a distinctly military cut. A sign of the times, perhaps. As he was a member of the Loyalist Committee and a man closely involved with the debates over the Republic's security, it was not surprising that he was also summoned. Master Yoda, he said, leaping to his feet, what a mercy to see you safely returned from Geonosis, he hesitated, his relieved smile fading. Is it true, I'm given to understand we were victorious, but that you suffered many Jedi casualties? Yoda nodded.
True it is, Senator.
Ah, said Organa, resuming his seat. I am very sorry to hear that. Please accept my condolences. He was a good man, genuinely moved.
Thank you.
Organa hesitated, then added, The clone troopers, Master Yoda, they were effective?
Most effective, Senator. The difference they made.
Well, I'm glad of that, for the Jedi's sake, but it's troubling, Organa murmured. Because now the Separatists know we have the means with which to hurt them, defeat them. I fear Senator Amidala was right after all. They will interpret the formation of this Grand Army of the Republic as an outright declaration of war. Any attempt now to solve this crisis diplomatically will be seen by them as nothing more than a stalling tactic, a ruse to buy some time so we can consolidate our new forces.
Accurately have you summed up the situation, Senator? Said Yoda, grimly approving. All around us, the shadows of war gather. Much suffering do I see in the months ahead.
Organa pushed to his feet again and began pacing the antechamber.
There must be some way to prevent it, Master Yoda. I refuse to accept that our great and noble Republic can just allow itself to slide without resistance into unchecked bloodshed. The Senate has to act. It has to stop this violence before it spreads. If we allow grief and anger over Geonosis to push us into retaliation, if we give ourselves permission to say this death justifies that one, then we truly are lost, and the Republic is doomed.
Before Yoda could reply, the doors to Palpatine's office opened, and Mos Amita stepped into the antechamber.
Master Yoda, Senator Organa, he said politely. The Supreme Chancellor will see you now.
Chapter 2 Palpatine was standing by the vast transparasteel window behind his desk, soberly gazing at the endlessly complicated ribbons of traffic seething across Coruscant's cityscape. Hearing their entrance, he turned, gravely smiling.
Master Yoda, I lack the words to express my profound relief that you have survived the carnage on Geonosis. In truth, I never dreamed the Separatists would take their petty disagreements with the Republic to such extreme and heartbreaking ends.
Surprised also am I, Supreme Chancellor, Yoda replied. Unforeseen was the development.
Palpatine returned to his chair.
Unforeseen, yes,
he murmured as Masamida took his accustomed place at his superior's right hand.
And by the Jedi, no less. That must be a matter of some concern for you.
He leaned forward, his expression intent.
Master Yoda, before we discuss the specifics of what transpired on Geonosis, I must know one thing. How fares my young friend Anakin? I was most alarmed to learn he's been hurt.
Hurt, yes, Supreme Chancellor, said Yoda, but dying he is not.
Palpatine sat back and passed an unsteady hand across his face.
Truly, he is protected by the Force.
His voice caught, and he shivered.
I'm sorry. You'll have to forgive my emotion. Anakin is very dear to me. Having watched him grow up from small boyhood, watched him develop into such a fine young man, so courageous, so powerful, such a credit to the Jedi Order. I take a close personal interest in his well-being. I do hope...
He faltered.
I hope you don't consider my concern for him, my affection, to be an intrusion, Master Yoda. Naturally, I don't wish to do anything that might impede Anakin's progress as a Jedi.
Yoda stared at the floor, both hands grasping his gimmer stick. There was no easy answer to that. Yes, he was concerned by Palpatine's attachment to the boy. No matter how well-meaning, no matter how genuine and heartfelt, the Supreme Chancellor's care for Obi-Wan's apprentice was problematic. The root cause of all young Skywalker's difficulties was his need for emotional connections. His friendship with Palpatine only complicated matters. But the man was Supreme Chancellor, and he meant well. Sometimes politics had to take precedence.
An intrusion, Supreme Chancellor? No, he said. Value your interest, young Skywalker does.
As I value him, Master Yoda, said Palpatine, I wonder...
He paused delicately.
Might I inquire as to the exact nature of his injuries?
Yoda glanced at Bail Organa, so far unacknowledged. Did it bother him? If so, he was masterful at concealing his feelings. Yoda thought to himself,
A good man he is, discreet and loyal. Still, discuss Jedi business before him I would rather not. And yet refuse to answer Palpatine I cannot.
He tapped his fingers on his gimmer stick, then nodded.
His right arm has young Skywalker lost, cut off in a lightsaber duel.
A duel?
Palpatine repeated, incredulous.
With whom? Who would be rash enough to draw a lightsaber on Anakin? Who in all the galaxy possesses the skill and knowledge to defeat a Jedi with his abilities?
Again, unwelcome, the shafting pain of failure and regret. Yoda made himself meet Palpatine's horrified gaze, unflinching.
Count Dooku, it was, Chancellor. True are the first reports we received from Master Kenobi. An enemy of the Republic has Count Dooku become.
Palpatine turned to Mos Amida, whose hands were spread wide in shocked dismay. Then he looked back, his mouth pinched, his eyes brilliant with distress.
Master Yoda, I scarcely know what to say. Count Dooku has betrayed the Jedi Order. He has betrayed us all. I don't understand. How could he do something so wicked?
Yoda frowned. He certainly wasn't going to talk of the Sith in front of Bail Organa.
Seduced by dreams of power is Dooku. A great tragedy this is.
Palpatine breathed out a pained sigh.
Tell me the rest, Master Yoda. Though I know it will break my heart, I must hear of Geonosis.
It was a tale told swiftly, without embellishment or emotion. When it was done, Palpatine removed from his chair once more to stand staring through the transperisteel window into Coruscant's teeming sky, hands clasped behind his back, chin sunk to his velvet and brocade-covered chest.
Do you know, my friends, he said at last, breaking the heavy silence, there are times when I begin to doubt I have the strength to go on.
Never say it, Mos Amida exclaimed. Without your leadership, the Republic could not survive.
Perhaps that was true once, Palpatine admitted. But if I, as Supreme Chancellor, can fail so terribly that these blind and foolish separatists are emboldened enough to deal us such a blow...
Supreme Chancellor, you are far too hard on yourself, said Bail Organa swiftly. If there is blame here, it belongs to this treacherous Count Dooku and the leaders of the various guilds and unions that support him, who manipulate events and the weaker, more gullible systems to their own advantage. They are the ones who have failed the Republic, not you. The blood spilled on Geonosis stains their hands, not yours. From the very beginning of this dispute, you have done nothing but strive to find a peaceful solution.
And I have failed, Palpatine retorted, swinging around. Who knows better than I, Bail, how important it is for this violence to end? I, as a man whose home planet was invaded, who was forced to stand by helpless as an impotent Supreme Chancellor and a dilatory Senate allowed the people they were sworn to protect die in the name of Trade Federation greed. 10 years have passed since that dreadful time, but how have my circumstances changed, I ask you? They haven't. Though I stand before you the Supreme Chancellor of this Republic, I'm still helpless. We are facing the gravest threat in our history. Republic citizens are dying. Jedi are dying. Because I failed to act in time to prevent this tragedy.
Not true, said Organa. The only person with the power to prevent this tragedy was Dooku, and he chose to perpetrate an atrocity instead. No blame falls to you, Supreme Chancellor. You're owed our gratitude for having the courage to take the difficult but necessary step of commissioning the clone army. Without it, Master Yoda and his Jedi would doubtless have been slaughtered to the last. And where would the Republic be then? Slowly, Palpatine sat down.
I confess you surprise me, Bail. Given your close relationship with Senator Amidala, I wasn't entirely certain you agreed with my decision.
Organa looked taken aback. It's true I respect and admire the senator from Naboo, he said. Since serving with her on the Loyalist Committee, I've come to appreciate her unique qualities. But I have always thought our Republic must be defended, despite the very real risks that entails.
And I appreciate your ongoing support, Palpatine replied, his faint smile pained. Especially as I must ask you to shoulder even more responsibility. Senator Organa, I feel the Loyalist Committee has served its purpose. We need a new committee now. One that can oversee all matters pertaining to Republic security. It should consist of yourself as chair, and 3 or 4 senators whom you can trust absolutely. Will you see to it? Will you take the lead?
Organa nodded. Of course, Supreme Chancellor, I'm honored that you'd ask.
Excellent, said Palpatine, his expression serious. And Master Yoda, once you've taken care of any Jedi business arising from the Battle of Geonosis, you, your fellow counselors, and I must convene a formal war committee so that we might bring this unpleasantness to a swift and decisive conclusion. For the sake of the Republic, we must win this conflict.
Yoda frowned. Deeper Jedi involvement with government matters? It was the last thing he desired. But Palpatine was right about one thing.
Agree with you, I do, Supreme Chancellor. Ended this war must swiftly be, and the peace well prepared for.
Then I shall delay you no longer, said Palpatine, standing. Thank you for coming so promptly to see me, when I know you must surely prefer to be with your wounded Jedi. Please, when you see him, tell Anakin he's in my thoughts.
Of course, Supreme Chancellor. And hesitate to send for me, you should not, if of any further assistance I can be.
Palpatine smiled.
Do not doubt it for an instant, Master Yoda. Believe me when I say that you and the Jedi are never far from my plans.
Dismissed, Yoda and Bail Organa withdrew from Palpatine's office. Regretting the lack of his repulsor lift chair, Yoda contemplated the long walk to the docking complex and swallowed a sigh. I'm leaving myself now, said Organa. Can I take you back to the Jedi Temple, Master Yoda?
A kind offer, that is,
Yoda replied, nodding.
Accept it, I will. Much to do there I have, with no time to waste.
And at the top of his list, regrettably, was what would surely prove to be a difficult conversation with Obi-Wan Kenobi. Scant moments after entering the temple's halls of healing, he was ushered to meet with Master Vokara Che in her private chamber.
Master Yoda,
the revered Twi'lek said, smiling gently with cool, watchful eyes.
It's a great relief to see you unharmed. I understand you dueled with Dooku. It has been a long time since you drew your lightsaber in battle.
He gave her a small, one-shouldered shrug. He was sore and weary, but those things would pass.
Unhurt am I, Vokara Che. Worry you need not. Of our wounded Jedi, tell me, how do they fare?
Most were healed or healing. Anakin was the worst affected, but he was resting comfortably enough, all things considered. He remained in a deep healing trance to counteract the shock of his injury while the final adjustments were made to his prosthetic arm. Tragically, the lightsaber damage inflicted upon his severed forearm made reattachment of the limb impossible.
But I anticipate he'll make a full recovery,
Vokara Che concluded.
Although doubtless he'll struggle a little at first.
A prosthetic arm,
Yoda pondered. He felt his spirits sink, although he'd been expecting the news. A Jedi's connection with the Force flowed through the midichlorians in his blood. The loss of a limb had been known to affect a Jedi's powers. True, Anakin Skywalker possessed more midichlorians than any Jedi in history, but even so...
See him now, I will, he said heavily. And Obi-Wan also.
Vokara Che frowned, her headtails gently twitching.
Yes, of course, Master Yoda, about Obi-Wan.
Tell me you need not, Vokara Che. Himself he blames for Skywalker's hurt.
They'd both known Obi-Wan from infancy. Expression rueful, she nodded.
Should we expect anything less from him?
They should not, Yoda thought. No Jedi could have undertaken the daunting task of training Anakin Skywalker more seriously than had Obi-Wan Kenobi. Burdened by his promise to a dying man, by the knowledge that he trained a child of prophecy, by the ongoing fear that he would make a mistake, let Qui-Gon down, not a day passed when Obi-Wan did not find a way to make Anakin's faults and failures his own. Sighing, Yoda slid down from his chair.
Counsel, Obi-Wan, I will.
Vokara Che smiled, relieved, and stood.
Good.
Then the smile faded.
First, however,
she cleared her throat.
I'm not sure if you are aware of this, but Senator Amidala accompanied Obi-Wan and his apprentice here. We treated her, of course, but not before there was a certain unpleasantness. She was very concerned about Anakin, insisted on seeing him. Heated words were exchanged when I refused. There might be an official complaint. I am sorry.
Yoda felt his embattled spirit sink farther. Senator Amidala. Another problem, another mystery, another piece of the puzzle that was Anakin Skywalker. With an effort, he wrenched himself free of worry.
Concerned you need not be, Vokara Che. Now, to see young Skywalker, please take me. Then I will speak with Master Kenobi,
With the debilitating pain of his lightsaber wounds at last a memory, Obi-Wan paced the confines of his healing chamber and cursed the hard-won discipline that prevented him from finding the nearest healer so he could demand that he be shown to Anakin's room at once.
Master Kenobi?
Said a stern, familiar voice. Yoda. He turned.
Your Padawan sleeps,
said Yoda in the open doorway.
Safe from pain he is for now. Sit now, so talk we may.
Disobeying Yoda was unthinkable. Obi-Wan sank cross-legged to the floor, hands folded in his lap. Forgive me, Master, he murmured. I am not in full control of my emotions.
Need you to tell me that, do I?
Said Yoda.
I think I do not.
Though the reproof was cutting, still it contained an undercurrent of dry humor. Obi-Wan risked an upward glance to see that Yoda's expression was not one of unmingled disapproval. A certain gentleness lurked in his luminous eyes. "Forgive me," he said again. "I meant no disrespect."
"Hmm," said Yoda, and again he tapped his gimmer stick to the floor. "Pleased I am to see you are healed, Master Kenobi. For to your duties you must return. Much there is to be done, with war threatening."
Though it might earn him an even more stinging reprimand, Obi-Wan had to speak. "Master Yoda, my place is here with Anakin. He is wounded because of me."
"He is wounded because of Dooku," retorted Yoda. "And because disobey you he did. A child no longer is Anakin Skywalker. A man he is now, and a man he must be, His own faults must he accept and make amends for."
"I believe Anakin has already made amends, Master Yoda. He is maimed. He nearly died."
"And your fault that is not."
It should have made a difference to hear Yoda say so. It should have eased the crushing burden of his grief and guilt. But it didn't. Nothing did. Nothing could.
"Anakin is my Padawan," Obi-Wan thought. "It is my duty to protect him."
"Protect him from himself you cannot, Obi-Wan," said Yoda gently. "Protect you from yourself, could Qui-Gon, when mistakes you made as his apprentice?"
Melitta Dawn, so long ago now and rarely thought of. Swallowing, he met Yoda's stern gaze. "No."
"Learn the error of your ways, you did," said Yoda. "Learn, too, will your apprentice. A task for you I have, Obi-Wan. When it is completed, return here you can."
Obi-Wan nodded. "Thank you, Master." But instead of detailing this task, Yoda began to pace the small chamber, the tapping of his gimmer stick loud in its silence.
"Know, do you, Obi-Wan, why reluctant I was for Skywalker to become your apprentice?"
Did he know? Not for certain. And once he and Qui-Gon had prevailed over the Council, and Anakin had been made his Padawan, Yoda's objections had no longer mattered. No, Master, he said cautiously. Yoda flicked him a skeptical glance.
Then tell you I will. Reluctant I was because the same flaw you share, Obi-Wan. The flaw of attachment.
What? He thought, then said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Yoda snorted.
Yes, you do. Melitta Dawn, attachment that was. Your promise to Qui-Gon Jinn that you would train Anakin? From attachment it sprang. Great affection you felt for him. Great affection you feel for Anakin Skywalker, Run deep your feelings, do, Obi-Wan. Mastered them completely you have not, Mastered his own young Skywalker has not. Suspect I do that strict with him about attachments you have not always been.
It was true, he hadn't. Because Anakin wasn't like other Padawans. Anakin remembered his mother. More than that, he was bonded with her. Their ties were primal and could not easily be broken. But the Council had known that when they accepted him for training. So it hardly seemed fair to criticize him for it. Neither was it fair to give him a little leeway because of it. So he had, because Yoda was right about one thing at least. Attachment was something he did understand.
Because of attachment to his mother,
Yoda continued, his expression severe.
To Tatooine did young Skywalker go, defying your direct instructions,
Obi-Wan stared. He has not told me why he left Naboo. There was no time to discuss it. Events on Geonosis moved too quickly.
To Shmi Skywalker has something happened, I fear,
said Yoda quietly.
What?
Sensed young Skywalker in the Force, I did. Great pain. Great anger. A terrible tragedy.
Oh, no, Obi-Wan thought, then said. He said nothing to me, Master Yoda. If something had happened to his mother, I'm sure he'd tell me. Then Obi-Wan thought,
he'd tell me, wouldn't he? Or wouldn't I sense it?
Except he'd been so angry with Anakin, so disappointed and frustrated by the boy's rank disobedience, for letting himself be captured, for dragging Padme down with him. So when they'd seen each other in that Geonosis arena, He'd been distracted, his senses clouded by emotion.
Attachment interfering again, he thought.
Yoda said, still pacing. Then he stopped, his eyes half-lidded, his mouth pursed in the way that made every sensible Jedi wary. The gimmer stick rapped once hard on the floor.
Senator Amidala, aware of your Padawan's feelings for her, were you?
Obi-Wan dropped his gaze to his hands, still folded in his lap. I know he admired her greatly as a small boy. I realized when we were assigned to her protection that he hadn't forgotten that admiration or her. He looked up. I did remind him, Master, that the path he's chosen forbids anything but a warm cordiality between them. Yoda's eyes narrowed further.
Heed your reminder, Obi-Wan. He did not.
Obi-Wan felt his heart thud. Yoda knew. His desperate argument with Anakin in the gunship as they pursued Dooku to their doom. Anakin's wild insistence on abandoning duty to save Padme. Yoda knew.
While Anakin sleeps, to Senator Amidala you will go, Yoda continued. Ended his relationship with her must be, before more trouble it causes. Know this better than most, do you, Obi-Wan,
Ciri, old pain, swiftly pulsing, thrust swiftly aside. Another life. Another Obi-Wan. Yoda was right. Anakin's attachment to Padme could not continue. It had already proven itself a dangerous distraction. I survived the loss. Anakin will survive it too, Obi-Wan thought. The only problem was
the way she ran to Anakin so gravely wounded in that cabin, the tenderness in her eyes, her touch, her fierce protection of him on the journey back to Coruscant. How she ignored her own pain for his, and how she fought to see him here in the temple.
Master Yoda, I fear the matter is not quite so straightforward, he said carefully. I believe Anakin's feelings are reciprocated. It's likely Senator Amidala will resent my intrusion into her private affairs.
Private affairs?
Yoda's ears lifted, and his eyes opened wide.
Privacy there is not where a Jedi is involved. Of no importance are her feelings, Obi-Wan. This relationship, you will end.
Obi-Wan nodded. Yes, Master, he said, reaching for the perfectly self-disciplined and tranquil Jedi. Beneath the surface, doubt seethed.
Go now, Obi-Wan, said Yoda. Nothing to be gained there is by waiting.
Yes, Master, he said again. After all, he had no choice. Chapter 3. Though the night was still young, Padme lay in her darkened chamber seeking the blessed oblivion of sleep. Unfortunately, sleep remained stubbornly elusive.
I told Anakin I loved him because I thought we were about to die, she thought. But we survived. And now there's no going back. He is my heart. We are together for life.
Restless, she shifted beneath her light sheets, tormented by the memory of running into the cavern on Geonosis, seeing him so dreadfully hurt and lost, seeing his severed arm abandoned in the dirt. Such a wounding, coming so hard on the heels of his mother's brutal slaughter, of what had happened afterward. And because they hadn't been alone, because Obi-Wan was there and the truly formidable Yoda, she hadn't been able to kiss him or weep with him. A hug was all she'd been allowed. Yoda's clone troopers had moved her aside so they could support him, help him into the gunship, help him board the starship that had carried them home. That had been the worst pain of all. Her closed chamber door chimed.
What?
With a resentful sigh, she pulled on a robe and answered it.
C-3PO, I said I didn't want to be disturbed.
Oh, Mistress Padme, please forgive me, said the agitated droid. I did try to convince him to go away, but he's insistent, almost rude, so unlike him, and...
Who is? Who's here?
Why, Master Kenobi. And he says he won't leave until the two of you have spoken.
Something must have happened. Anakin.
Tell him I'll be there in a moment, she said, her mouth dry. Offer him refreshments. I won't be long.
As soon as the door closed behind the droid, she tore off her sleepwear and pulled on a simple but elegant blue dress instead. Clothes were armor. If he'd brought her bad news, if Anakin was... She didn't want to face him at the smallest disadvantage.
But Anakin's not dead, she thought. If he were dead, I would know.
Obi-Wan was waiting for her in the living room, neatly dressed in a fresh Jedi tunic and leggings. From the way he stood there, steady on his feet, his face no longer pale and twisted with pain, it was clear the healers had seen to the lightsaber wounds that had rendered him more helpless than she could ever have thought possible. Obi-Wan, she said, joining him, have you come to take me back to the temple? Am I permitted to see Anakin now? He bowed his head briefly, hands clasped before him. No, Senator Amidala, I'm afraid that's not possible.
Senator, not Padme, she thought,
and nothing in his manner but a stiff formality.
I see, she said, guarded. In that case, given recent events, can't your errand wait? I'm tired, I need to rest.
I do appreciate that, Senator, he said, and I am sorry to disturb you, but no, this cannot wait.
Really? She thought. Well, that wasn't for him to decide, was it? Her home, her rules.
She folded her arms.
Have you seen Anakin?
If he was annoyed, he didn't show it. He's resting comfortably. There's no need for you to be concerned. So cool he was. Positively indifferent. Anyone would think he spoke of a mere acquaintance. But she knew better.
C-3PO returned with Tarlaxian tea. Obi-Wan shook his head.
No, thank you. She took a cup for the distraction as much as anything, then nodded a dismissal at the fussy droid Anakin had built.
That's all. I'll call you if I need you again.
As the door closed behind 3PO, she turned back to Obi-Wan.
Why are you here?
He hesitated, then sighed, abandoned his nonsensical reserve.
Because we need to talk, Padme. She felt her heart thud. I see. Well, if we're going to talk, let's do so in comfort.
She gestured to the sofa and chairs.
Please, be seated.
Another hesitation, then he nodded. Thank you, he said, subdued, and folded himself onto a chair. She chose the sofa opposite and considered him over the rim of her teacup. His spine was straight, his shoulders braced as though he expected trouble, some kind of attack. And surprisingly, he seemed at a sudden loss for words.
All right then, she thought. I'll make the first move.
She put the cup down on the small table beside her. Even though you're concerned for Anakin, and I know you are, so don't bother with the stoic Jedi act, I imagine you're not very pleased with him right now. But you should know, Obi-Wan, he did not disobey his orders lightly. Startled, he stared at her. Then he pulled a wry face. Which time do you mean? When he left Naboo for Tatooine or Tatooine for Geonosis?
Both times. Obi-Wan, no matter what you might think, he takes being a Jedi very seriously. It's all he talks about, being a Jedi and not disappointing you.
But Obi-Wan wasn't listening. He stared into the distance, his eyes shadowed, his expression grim. And then he looked at her.
What happened to Anakin's mother, Padme?
The question jolted her unpleasantly. She hadn't realized he knew anything was wrong.
What happened? She died.
And that jolted him. Good.
What do you mean, she died? He said, sounding shaken. How?
And where was Anakin? What? She held up a hand, halting the spate of questions. It wasn't her place to discuss Shmi Skywalker's death with this man. Not her death, and not what had happened to the Sand People afterward.
I'm sorry. If you want to know more, you'll have to ask Anakin.
And Obi-Wan didn't like that, but he was smart enough not to push. I can forgive him going to Tatooine if the decision involved his mother, he said. But in going to Geonosis, he was willfully disobedient. He was...
No, Obi-Wan. That was my decision, not his.
Yours?
That's right. Anakin wanted to save you from the Separatists, and wanted to obey Master Windu. Obviously, he couldn't do both, so I made the choice for him. The one he wanted to make, but was afraid to, because of the consequences. Because whatever choice he made, he would have been wrong. Obi-Wan frowned at her. Following a direct order from the Jedi Council is never wrong, Senator. Disobeying an order, that is the error. Qui-Gon disregarded the Council quite often, she retorted. He told me so on Tatooine. He said it was the height of folly to substitute someone else's judgment for your own, when you're the person best placed to decide. Picking up her cup again, she took a small sip of tea. I'd be very surprised if he never gave you the same advice, Obi-Wan. His eyes blanked. His expression froze. I have not come here to discuss Qui-Gon Jinn. She couldn't help shivering. His voice was so cold. This was the Obi-Wan who could reduce Anakin to chastened silence, almost to tears. But I won't be intimidated, she thought. He has no right to chastise me. She put the cup down again. Fine, then let's discuss this. If you had died in that arena because he didn't go to your aid, Anakin would have been devastated. Do you honestly think I'd stand by and let that happen? Your actions are not the point, Padme. The point is that Anakin shouldn't have let it happen. He is a Jedi. He is required to put duty before his personal feelings. And he did. He was prepared to do what Master Windu told him. I'm the one who decided to rescue you. And as my appointed bodyguard, Anakin had no choice but to tag along. That earned her a look tinged with bitterness. Very creative of you, Senator, said Obi-Wan. Qui-Gon would be proud. She leaned forward, trying to reach him, to reach through that self-possessed, deflecting Jedi manner. Anakin admires you so much, Obi-Wan. He needs to know you trust him. He nodded. He does know. Really? She sat back. I wonder. You don't believe me. Why not? Because if he believed you trusted him, he'd be less uncertain. Less uncertain? Echoed Obi-Wan, incredulous. Padme, Anakin's problem is not a lack of certainty. Quite the opposite, in fact. It's his overconfidence that has proven his undoing. Had he not disobeyed me, not leapt in to face Dooku alone, he would not now be lying unconscious in the temple, waiting for them to complete construction of his prosthetic arm. So, she said, her heart pounding, you blame Anakin for what happened. Obi-Wan stood and half turned away from her. I did not come here to rehash the events on Geonosis. That is Jedi business, not yours. Then get to the point or return to the temple, Obi-Wan, she retorted. I didn't invite you here, and I permitted you to stay as a courtesy, no more. Slowly he turned back to her. His face was pale, his clear blue eyes darkened with difficult emotions. The point is, there can be no hope for anything but a civil cordiality between you and Anakin, Senator. He has made a commitment to the Jedi Order. His life is with us. To dream otherwise is folly. She felt a shimmer of rage in her blood, like heat dancing on the Tatooine desert. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't take me for a fool, Padme, he snapped. Of course you do. He has feelings for you. Strong feelings that cloud his judgment and make him disobedient to the Order. Are you going to pretend you don't have similar feelings for him? My feelings are my own affair. Not when they involve a Jedi. Breathing harshly, they glared at each other. If she could see pain in him, surely he could see it in her, too. This is why you came? She whispered. To tell me I must forget Anakin? I came because I was told to, he replied after a moment. And because I'm trying to protect him. And you, though I don't expect you to believe that. But Padme, he dropped to the edge of his seat again, touched his fingertips to her knee. It's true. You must know that to pursue this any further will only lead to heartbreak for both of you. If you do love Anakin, you must let him go. He can't love you and be a Jedi, and he was born to be a Jedi. He has a great destiny, greater than you or I can imagine. If he is not free to pursue it, a great many people may pay a dreadful price. Is that what you want? She blinked rapidly, banishing tears.
And do you love him so little you would have him condemned to a lifetime of loneliness? All in the name of some prophecy not a one of your precious Jedi Council can say for certain is true?
Again Obi-Wan stood, and this time he walked away. If I did not love him, he said, his voice unsteady, his back turned, I would not be here now. She leapt to her feet.
Then I think you and I define love very differently. I will never do anything to hurt Anakin. Can you say the same, Obi-Wan?
He swung around, his eyes blazing.
That's a stupid, childish thing to say.
Obi-Wan, I am worried for him. Can't you understand that? He took a deep breath, let it out hard, regaining his composure. Padme, you're wrong if you think I don't realize what I'm asking. I do. The life of a Jedi is lonely. It demands of us the greatest sacrifices, the placing of our needs last and those of strangers first. But how much suffering would there be if the Jedi abandoned their duty? Is that what you want? Is that what you think Anakin wants?
He wants to serve the Jedi, she thought, and he wants to love and be loved. I refuse to accept he must be forced to choose.
I have no authority over you, Obi-Wan continued. I'm perfectly aware of that. But I would ask you, beg you, to do this one thing. Leave Coruscant. Return to Naboo. Give Anakin the time he needs to recover from his injury. And realize what you and I already know, that going your separate ways is the only possible remedy for this unfortunate situation. She blinked back, stinging tears, as she thought,
You say you understand, Obi-Wan, but you don't. In every way that counts, you don't know Anakin at all. But I do. I know him. I have seen his true heart. All of it. My love can save him.
But she couldn't tell Obi-Wan that. He'd never believe it. And he would never turn a blind eye now that he knew she and Anakin loved each other. So she had to make him think he'd convinced her to abandon Anakin. The need for such a deception grieved her. She liked Obi-Wan very much, and she knew he did love Anakin in the pallid, self-contained way of the Jedi. But Anakin's love was like the heat of a supernova. In attempting to control it, the Jedi would destroy him.
I will die before I let that happen, she thought.
She lifted her gaze to his.
Do you truly believe my love can only harm him?
Yes, Padme, he said, and had to clear his throat.
I do.
It wasn't hard to let the tears rise again. The simple sincerity in his voice hurt her, and she hadn't been expecting that.
I see.
I am sorry, he said, sounding helpless. I wish things could be different. I truly do. But you must understand. No good can come of this relationship for either of you.
Perhaps you're right, she whispered with just enough reluctance.
I am. She stifled a sob.
I don't want to hurt him.
I know, Padme, but better a small cruelty now than a crushing devastation later. Now she let the tears flow without restraint.
He'll never forgive me.
Obi-Wan took a step closer. Perhaps not, he said, his voice unsteady.
But could you forgive yourself if loving you destroyed him? No, I'd die, she said simply, and spoke the utter truth.
Then you know what to do.
Yes,
she whispered, still weeping.
I'll leave Coruscant, spend some time with my family, and perhaps I won't return. To be honest, I'm not certain I can make a difference anymore. I lost the battle against the formation of the army, and now I fear the voices of peace have been drowned out entirely. I do need some time to decide what I'll do next.
Surprising her, Obi-Wan took her hand. His fingers were cold. You're wrong. The Senate will need you now more than ever. Gently, she pulled free.
Maybe. Obi-Wan, I should be the one to make the break with Anakin.
If it comes from you, he'll be angry, resentful. And I don't want there to be trouble between you. Besides, if it comes from you, he might not believe it, and then I'll just have to tell him anyway.
He smoothed his beard, thinking.
All right. Let him escort me home to Naboo. Saying goodbye is going to be difficult. I'd like our parting to be private. Please, Obi-Wan, she added, seeing his reluctance. You owe me that much.
He sighed.
I can make no promises, but I'll do my best. Thank you.
Padme, he shook his head. You're doing the right thing. The only thing that can keep him safe. Anakin will need all his strength, his focus, for what is to come. You don't see it now, but you will in time. He left her then. Welcoming the solitude, she stood on her apartment's veranda and stared across the Coruscant cityscape to the distant, imposing Jedi temple where Anakin lay cradled in his healing trance.
Have no fear, my love. I won't let them come between us, she thought. And if we stand together, not even the Force will tear us apart.
Obi-Wan returned directly to the temple, to Yoda. Duty before personal feelings, always. Seeing his injured Padawan would have to wait.
Shmi was dead. Oh, Anakin, he thought.
Done it is,
said Yoda, cross-legged on the meditation pad in his private chamber. Feeling sick, feeling empty, he bowed.
Yes, Master.
Good. Necessary this was. Necessary it would not have been, Obi-Wan, if closer attention you had paid.
Yoda's eyes narrowed.
Disappointed I am.
And that was a lightsaber thrust between his ribs. I am truly sorry, Master. Yoda tilted his chin, his steady gaze implacable.
A lesson let this be, Master Kenobi. Attachment leads to suffering for a Jedi. School yourself. School your Padawan. While you still can. A Jedi Knight must he become. Sooner than we thought.
What? No,
Obi-Wan thought. Master Yoda, he is not ready.
Make him ready you must, Obi-Wan. Your task, that is.
Given Yoda's mood, it was folly to argue, but he couldn't stay silent.
Master Yoda, is there really a need to be precipitate? Surely it would be unwise to rush Anakin, especially now. His injury... And, Master, his mother is dead.
Yoda nodded, short and sharp.
Yes, but mothers die, Obi-Wan. Sad it is, but distract a Jedi, death must not,
And that was true. It was true, but...
Not distract him, Obi-Wan thought. Yoda, Yoda, you don't know Anakin.
Yes, Master, he said with great care.
But while I know our lost Jedi must be replaced, our victory on Geonosis was decisive. Surely there's a chance Dooku and the Separatists will think twice before escalating this conflict. Now that they've seen the military might at our command, they must know it would be madness.
Yoda pursed his lips.
Madness, yes. Think Dooku is sane, do you? To the dark side he has turned. Insanity, that is.
So war is inevitable. Yoda closed his eyes and lowered his head.
Perhaps, he murmured. Wait, we must, to see what the Force shows us.
And what an agonizing wait it would be.
Yes, Master, Obi-Wan said. In which case, while we are waiting,
Yoda looked up.
To your Padawan you may go, Obi-Wan. Your support and guidance will he need through this difficult transition,
Yes, Master, thank you, he said, retreating to the chamber door.
Obi-Wan.
Chilled by the grimness in Yoda's voice, he turned.
Yes, Master?
Yoda's stare was bleak.
Great are the challenges your Padawan will face. To be his friend, your heart will urge you. But Obi-Wan, a mistake that would be. A friend young Skywalker does not need. A master he needs, And a master you must be.
I understand, Obi-Wan replied, and took his leave. But as he made his long way to the halls of healing, he realized it wasn't advice he was prepared to take. For 10 years I have been a master to Anakin, he thought, and all that got me was defiance. The more I criticize him, the more he turns away. The more I withdraw, the angrier he becomes. More criticism, more emotional distance isn't the answer. He's not a typical Jedi. He never has been. Yet I have tried to turn him into one. I've tried to contain him, control him. For his own good, it's true. But even so, if he's to be a Jedi Knight soon, that has to end. Besides, with the struggle of physical rehabilitation before him, with the death of his dreams about Padme to come, with the crushing, terrible loss of his mother to face, the only thing Anakin needed now was a friend. Tangled in nightmare, Anakin despaired.
Mom! Mom, stay with me! Mom!
So beaten, so brutalized, he'd failed her.
You look so handsome. I love you.
The pain in her voice, the blood, the shame. She breathed in, she breathed out, and then she didn't breathe again.
Stay with me, Mom. Don't leave me.
Mom! He shouted and opened his eyes. His face was soaking wet. He could feel the hot tears.
Hush, said Obi-Wan. Anakin, hush. Keep still. You've been badly hurt.
As if he didn't know that. As if he couldn't feel the gaping hole in his chest where his heart had been. Where his heart was ripped out. Where an ocean of acid turned his world to pain. He looked at the man who'd been his mentor and friend for 10 years. And all he could think of was what he'd just lost. What he'd given up by joining the Jedi.
My mother's dead, he whispered. And it's all your fault.
Obi-Wan jerked back.
What? No, Anakin, no!
Get away from me, Anakin said, as the edges of his vision rippled scarlet and black, and the rage that dwelled inside him drew its breath to scream.
I don't want you here. She'd be alive if you'd believed in my dreams. She'd be alive if I had freed her. Get away from me, Obi-Wan. Leave me alone.
But Obi-Wan wouldn't.
I'm sorry. I didn't know, Anakin. You didn't dream she was in danger. You didn't dream she'd die. If you'd told me.
Anakin looked down at Obi-Wan's hand on his shoulder and shrugged, trying to dislodge it.
Don't touch me. Are you deaf? I said leave me alone.
Still, Obi-Wan ignored him. Of course. Because that's what he did. He gave orders. He never listened.
Anakin, you have to know it wasn't deliberate.
All he had to know was that this man had failed him. Sickened, trembling, on the brink of losing self-control completely, he reached out to pluck himself free of Obi-Wan's grasping fingers. In the chamber's warm, soft light, the golden armature gleamed.
What?
He said, confused and staring.
His arm? That was his arm. His hand. How was that possible? He wasn't a droid. He was flesh and blood. What's that? I don't...
And then it all came pouring back. A torrent of pitiless, excoriating memory.
Kissing Padme.
The Geonosis Arena. The slaughter. All those Jedi murdered in the sun. The desperate chase after Dooku. The duel in the cavern. Obi-Wan cut down, heartbeats from death. And his arm. His arm. As though the images were a trigger, as though remembering a thing was the same as reliving it, the agony of that saber cut burst through him like a storm. And Obi-Wan held him as he wept. Chapter 4. Now, the Clone Wars, after the Battle of Christophsis.
No, Ahsoka, not like that, said Anakin, frustrated. How come you don't listen to me?
Glowering at him, Ahsoka stepped back.
Don't yell at me, Sky Guy. I'm doing the best I can.
If I'm not doing it right, that's your fault, not mine. You're the Jedi Master, and I'm the Padawan, remember? I'm not supposed to know everything yet.
Incredulous, he stared at her. Then he turned and stalked away from his insolent apprentice before he got himself in trouble by uttering words more suited to the heat of a hotly contested pod race than the hushed serenity of a Jedi Temple dojo. Again, still, he was startled by the lack of a Padawan braid slapping his shoulder in time with his gait. He should be used to its absence by now. Weeks had flown by since that brief, solemn ceremony in which Obi-Wan had cut him free of his past, handing him his childhood with a cautiously approving nod.
They might not have made me a Jedi Knight too soon, he thought, but I'm pretty sure I'm not ready for an apprentice. At least not an apprentice like Ahsoka.
Glancing up, he saw his former master standing on the dojo's observation balcony, arms folded across his chest in that particular way he had. He was hiding an amused smile in his beard.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny. It's a riot. You think this is payback, Obi-Wan, don't you?
He thought.
You think I'm getting my just desserts.
Well, and maybe he was. He turned back to his apprentice. She hadn't moved a step, hadn't lowered her defiantly tilted chin, hadn't powered down her training lightsaber that zapped but didn't maim or kill. Instead, she just stood there, dangerously close to pouting, tears of anger and frustration shimmering in her eyes. He knew that look, knew how it felt to be wearing it on his face. How many times over the last 10 years had he stared at Obi-Wan just like that, fought the urge to stamp and shout his rage and disappointment, not always successfully. His own frustration died then, seeing Ahsoka's distress. He sighed and walked back to her, deactivating his own training lightsaber.
Look, he said, halting in front of her. It's not that you're doing a bad job. You're not.
But that's not the same as doing a good job, Ahsoka. Her chin lifted a little higher.
I did a good job on Christophsis, didn't I? And on Teth and Tatooine? I never said you didn't, but you got lucky a lot, too. Luck can only take you so far, Padawan. Do you expect me to trust my life to you based on luck?
Slowly, slowly, her chin came down.
No,
she muttered.
Of course I don't.
Good, because I won't do it, he said sternly. Now, complete 50 repetitions of Nyman form level 1, by yourself. And I want every stroke perfect, Ahsoka, identical, centered in the Force. Don't rush it. Don't try and get it over with. Dwell within each beat of the exercise. He reached into his tunic and pulled out a droid cam. I'm going to record you so we can review your style and technique together later.
You mean you're not going to stay and watch?
She asked, sounding disappointed.
I'll be around, he replied, but it shouldn't matter where I am. It's where you are that counts. Centered in the Force, remember?
Flicking a switch, he activated the drone and tossed it into the air. Once Ahsoka moved, the droid cam would lock on and record her until she was finished with her task.
Now, begin.
While she did as she was told, her training lightsaber humming, he turned his back and walked away, feeling bad, feeling guilty that he'd been so hard on her.
That he hadn't let her know he'd been where she was now, very recently, and understood the overwhelming tangle of emotions all Padawans were forced to conquer. But this isn't about me, it's about her, he thought. Every Padawan walks the same path differently. She has to find her own way, in her own time. I can't help her. She can only help herself.
Something Obi-Wan had told him once, which, of course, he'd resented at the time. Clipping his powered-down training lightsaber to his belt, he made his way up the stairs to the observation balcony where his former master still stood, watching Ahsoka sink deeper and deeper into the Force. She shows great promise, Anakin, said Obi-Wan, glancing at him. The small, scrappy ones often turn out the best, you know. And was that a typical Obi-Wan compliment? Oblique, offhanded, never effusive?
I think it was, Anakin thought.
She'll do, Anakin grunted. Though I still don't understand why Master Yoda sent her to me, not when you haven't found a new apprentice of your own. There's no hurry for that, said Obi-Wan. Another smile was lurking. I'm still recovering from the rigors of my last one. Anakin rolled his eyes. Ha ha, he muttered. Didn't see that coming. Obi-Wan chuckled softly. Really? You should have.
I suppose, Anakin said, indulging in a little sarcasm of his own. This is when I'm meant to say, Wow, Obi-Wan, I never knew how tough you had it when you were training me. But I get it now. Now it all makes perfect sense.
Something like that, yes, said Obi-Wan, his smile widening. Anakin sighed.
Yeah, well, maybe I do.
A comfortable silence fell between them. Anakin welcomed it. The amusement, the banter, the easy camaraderie. In the immediate aftermath of Geonosis, when he was still recovering from his catastrophic injury, it had seemed their relationship was on the brink of unraveling. Only Obi-Wan's steadfast refusal to be pushed away had saved it. Only his willingness to accept his Padawan's rage, his grief, his blame, and not take any of it personally. And there'd been so much rage, so much grief. Even now the echoes lingered. They always would. He'd never be free of that moment in the Tatooine desert when he'd watched his mother die, felt her die. He'd never be free of what had happened next, the savage massacre under the stars. Obi-Wan knew nothing of that. He never would. Obi-Wan was the perfect Jedi. He could never understand the overwhelming need to kill what had killed the person he loved best. In the end, Anakin knew the only thing that had saved him was Padme, and the single perfect day they spent together after their secret wedding. Her love, her patience, her unquestioning acceptance of everything the Jedi demanded that he deny. But Obi-Wan had helped him too. With his blood and bone arm lost, his balance in the Force now irrevocably altered, he knew that without Obi-Wan, he'd never have come to trust his skills, himself, again. Never would have found a way past the nightmares of Dooku, the harrowing, nightly reliving of their brief and shocking duel, his failure, his maiming. Never found his way back to laughter and the joy that came with being a Jedi. And there was joy. Oh, there was such joy.
It was all my fault, Master, he had admitted to Obi-Wan on his return from Naboo after he had completed the private task of constructing his new lightsaber. My arrogance nearly got you killed, and my impatience led to my defeat. I wouldn't listen to you. I'm sorry.
He'd braced himself then for the inevitable lecture, a dissection of his myriad shortcomings. Instead, Obi-Wan had tried to smile and failed.
I'll gladly forgive you that, Anakin. If you'll forgive me the dreams of your mother, he replied, his voice not quite steady. I would have saved her for you if I could.
They didn't speak of either incident again. And what had often been a tense relationship between master and pupil gently transformed into a simple, unpressured, and unexpected friendship, which deepened during the countless hours they spent on lightsaber practice, preparing for war. Even before he'd been declared a Jedi Knight who had never undergone formal trials, just like Obi-Wan. He was starting to think they had a lot in common after all. Of course, they still had their moments. Sometimes Obi-Wan forgot the former part of former Padawan, and lectured or scolded. Forgot they were both Jedi Knights now, both generals with equal responsibilities. Men whose lives depended on their leadership. That was irritating. Sometimes he did wonder if Obi-Wan would ever truly see him as an equal, but mostly he didn't let it bother him. If he let it bother him, he might spoil things, and he didn't want that. 7 weeks after the Battle of Geonosis, not quite 3 weeks after Anakin farewelled without regret his Padawan braid, Dooku's separatist forces launched a brutal, multi-pronged attack on the Republic. He and Obi-Wan fought side by side, defending first Anoth and then Bakura. That was when they got their first sour taste of the monster Grievous. And then had come Christophsis, and everything changed. Looking back now, he realized that Christophsis and the subsequent missions to Teth, Tatooine, then with Ahsoka, had been the catalyst he'd needed to complete his transformation from Padawan to Jedi Knight.
Glancing sideways at Obi-Wan, remembering his master's restrained but heartfelt praise of that mission, he felt a twinge of guilt.
I wish I could tell him of Padme, he thought. The Jedi are wrong. Love doesn't weaken us, it makes us stronger. I wish Padme and I could show him that. He's very alone.
What? Said Obi-Wan. Is there a fly on my nose? Anakin shook his head.
I was just wondering how much longer we'll be stuck here on Coruscant when every day Jedi and the clone troops and ordinary people are fighting and dying for the Republic, for freedom. It's been over a week, and it feels wrong to be safe here when no one's safe out there. Not as long as Dooku and Grievous and the other Separatists don't care how much innocent blood they spill.
I know, said Obi-Wan and rested a hand on Anakin's shoulder. If it helps, I'm anxious too. The sooner we defeat Dooku and his cronies, the sooner we Jedi can return to our first, best purpose, safeguarding peace.
So you don't know anything?
Letting his hand fall, Obi-Wan cocked an eyebrow.
If you mean, do I know where and when our next mission will take place, then I must disappoint you.
But don't be in too great a hurry to leave, Anakin. The longer this war continues, the less frequent will our respites at home become. Enjoy Coruscant while you can, my young friend. Something tells me we'll become strangers to the temple soon enough.
A shiver of apprehension ran down Anakin's spine. Leaving Coruscant meant leaving Padme, and it seemed scant moments since they'd been reunited. When he closed his eyes, he could smell her subtle perfume, feel her fingers on his skin, her skin beneath his fingers, taste her tears of joy. Missing her was agony, their separation torture. Not that he resented the chance to do his duty. He meant every word he'd just said to Obi-Wan. He was desperate to see the Republic victorious against the Separatists. Already this war had brought him to despair, and the longer it continued, deeper would flow the rivers of blood.
We should never have let it get this far, Anakin thought. If we'd been stronger, the Separatists would never have become so bold. We should have stopped them. The blame is ours. What use are the Jedi if we refuse to use our power for good? Why have power at all if we're forbidden to wield it as strongly as we can?
Obi-Wan nudged him. Your apprentice has finished her task, Master Skywalker.
Anakin winced. Don't call me that. It doesn't sound right.
As Obi-Wan chuckled, Anakin looked down into the dojo to see that Ahsoka was indeed done with her 50 repetitions of Nyman Form Level 1. She was panting, her tunic damp from her exertions. Training lightsaber still engaged, she stared hopefully at the balcony.
Not that I wish to tell you how to school your Padawan, Obi-Wan added, but I think she's had enough for one day. What say you and I give her a demonstration of some more advanced techniques, hmm?
Anakin smiled.
Sparring. There was nothing he enjoyed more than sparring, especially against Obi-Wan, renowned as one of the temple's most accomplished and formidable duelists. They were so attuned to each other now, after years of crossing lightsabers in sport, that in many ways it was like dueling with himself.
An excellent idea, Master Kenobi, he said. Shall we? And with a shared grin, no further discussion needed, they leapt lightly over the edge of the balcony to land cushioned by the Force at a startled Ahsoka's feet.
Your training lightsaber, Padawan, said Obi-Wan at his most polite, hand outstretched. And then, perhaps, you should find a safe place to stand.
Clearly awed and excited, Ahsoka surrendered her training weapon. Then, with a cheeky glance at her master, she force-jumped up to the observation balcony.
Tut-tut, said Obi-Wan. Such levity, Anakin. I wonder where she learned that bad habit.
I can't imagine, Master, Anakin retorted, the old honorific slipping out. But it didn't feel wrong. It would never feel wrong. He unclipped the training lightsaber from his belt, powered it up, and let himself fall thoughtlessly, instinctively, into the prowling assessment that presaged every dueling bout. Eyes intent, that small smile lurking, Obi-Wan matched him step for step.
Ready?
Anakin nodded.
Always.
And their dance began. When Master Yoda told her she'd been apprenticed to Anakin Skywalker, Ahsoka didn't know whether to laugh or cry.
No Jedi in the temple cast a longer shadow than Anakin. No other Jedi was surrounded by more rumor, more speculation. The tales of his exploits grew more lurid with each retelling. Everyone knew him, yet no one knew him at all. Except for Master Obi-Wan, of course. And he was as inscrutable, it seemed, as his legendary former Padawan.
The Chosen One?
Ahsoka thought.
The Chosen One is to be my master? Oh, no. That can't be right. There must be some mistake. They've got the wrong apprentice.
Except Venerable Yoda didn't make mistakes. So, heart in her mouth, terror bubbling in her blood, she'd traveled to Christophsis to meet the man who'd guide her to Jedi knighthood. One way and another, they'd had an interesting time. He was more human than she'd been expecting, pretty much as brilliant and as volatile, more impatient, yet somehow more tolerant. All right, she'd skated pretty close to the edge a few times, asked for the reprimands he'd given her. That had been nerves. The desire to impress him, show him he'd landed himself the right apprentice. But she hadn't acquitted herself too badly, all in all. At least he hadn't seemed disappointed, hadn't run straight to Yoda on their return to the temple and demanded another Padawan, any Padawan, just to get Ahsoka out of my sight. So, it looked like they were together for the long haul. A proper team, Master and Padawan, fighting the good fight side by side. Standing tippy-toe on the observation balcony, peering over the railing to the Jedi below, she felt in herself an unbecoming envy.
I'll never handle a lightsaber as well as they do, she thought, even if I train 20 hours a day.
In some strange kind of Jedi alchemy, other Padawans and Jedi Knights were drifting to the dojo, joining her on the balcony to watch Master Obi-Wan and Master Anakin play as they dueled each other in the demanding Ataru Form 4. And it was play, even though they were deadly serious. Watching her mentor force leap over Master Obi-Wan's head, graceful as a Tarchalian gazelle, she wondered if he thought about what had happened on Geonosis, about nearly dying. It had happened once. It could happen again. Was he afraid? If so, he never showed it.
Will I ever be that brave? She thought. I hope so. I can't imagine it.
She wondered if he thought about the part of himself that was machine, not man. If she hadn't known his right hand and forearm were made of metal instead of flesh, she would never have suspected it. Nothing in the way he carried himself suggested he was no longer whole. A Jedi could sense the force in a lightsaber's crystal, sense the amplification of power, that barely controlled catastrophe of potential. A Jedi became one with it, formed a living link with the force as it flowed through and through the rare prism. So how did it feel to have that link interrupted by a prosthetic hand? What was it like for a Jedi to lose part of his incredible living connection to the Force?
I want to ask him, she considered. I don't think I can.
The balcony was crowded now, and a constant, excited commentary buzzed. Ahsoka frowned on the inside, where none of them could see. This was her training session. This was Obi-Wan and Anakin, Master Kenobi and Master Skywalker, dancing with their lightsabers for her. It wasn't fair, these others pushing in. An unworthy thought. And she thought it anyway. Just for a moment. Below them, in the dojo, the sparring Jedi had begun to sweat. But sweat didn't stop them. The mock fight carried on, strike and counter-strike, blow and counter-blow, leaping and spinning and slashing and evading, running and jumping as one with the Force. Every now and then, a sharp bark of laughter, a good-natured jibe, a clever hit acknowledged. Obi-Wan slapped his lightsaber across Anakin's backside, and Anakin pretended to howl. That made the crowd on the balcony laugh. Ahsoka laughed with them, and didn't mind so much that they were there. Because after all, she was Anakin's apprentice. No one could take that away from her. Though it scarcely seemed possible, they were fighting so swiftly already, Master Kenobi and Master Anakin increased their speed. The training lightsabers moved in a blur too fast to see with ordinary eyes. She could still count the individual moves. Her Togrutan heritage had gifted her with senses more acute than those of a human, and many other species besides.
Holding her breath, amazed and humbled, she watched two of the temple's finest Jedi put on a display of unmatched skill. Strike, block, parry, evade, bind, counterbind, countermeasure, broken time, body to body, and double release. Force push, force pull, feint, backflip, recover, and start again. When Obi-Wan ran up the wall and then across the ceiling and down the other side, and Anakin pursued him, everyone cheered, though it was hardly in keeping with Jedi reserve. She cheered. It was marvelous.
That's who I want to be one day, she thought. That's the kind of Jedi I want to become.
But not even Jedi like Obi-Wan and Anakin could keep up this kind of pace and power forever. Tired now, they finished their bout. Wringing wet, blowing hard, they bowed politely to each other. Then Obi-Wan reached out his hand and pressed his palm briefly to Anakin's cheek. Ahsoka saw his lips move, saw him say, "Well done." And the look on Anakin's face at those two small words brought her treacherously close to tears. The balcony was emptying swiftly, the Jedi Knights and Padawans returning to the business they'd abandoned for a short time. Soon, she was alone again, waiting for an instruction from her master. He was saying something to Obi-Wan in a low voice. She couldn't make out the words. Obi-Wan nodded, smiling, then glanced up. "Your training, Saber Padawan," he said, all perfect courtesy, and tossed the borrowed weapon to her. "My thanks for the loan of it." As Master Kenobi left the dojo, Anakin retrieved the recording drone that had captured her earlier exercises, and, to her surprise, because such things were frivolous, force-floated it to the balcony so she might pluck it from the air. "Find a private study chamber, Ahsoka, and examine your technique," he instructed. "Tomorrow morning, be ready to detail the best and worst 5 things that you did." She tucked the drone into her tunic. "Tomorrow, Master? We're not going to discuss my performance now?" He shook his head. "Now I have somewhere else to be." Again. She thought he did that a lot, take himself off without explanation. Where did he go? He never said, and she knew better than to ask. "Yes, Master. What time tomorrow?" He hesitated. "I'm not sure. Until I come for you, continue your training with a remote, and make sure to wear a blinder." Blind remote training again? She wanted to train with him. But she hid her disappointment and bowed. The perfect Padawan. "Yes, Master." "Good," he said, and withdrew. Alone and philosophical, she left the dojo. 5 good things and 5 bad, she mused, heading for the temple library. "Think I'll surprise him and find 10 instead." They had a name for it in Coruscant's grimy underbelly, buyer's remorse. In the aftermath of Geonosis, with the shadow of war deepening, Bail Organa truly understood what the term meant. He'd felt it first, a crushing hammer blow to the heart, standing on that private balcony with Palpatine and the others, watching tens of thousands of clone troopers marching with mathematical precision up the ramps of the great destroyer starships. Marching to their deaths, unquestioning, uncomplaining. Doing a terrible, inevitable duty, because that was all they'd been trained to do since birth. He felt it again now, listening to Palpatine regale the Senate with the official report on the Battle of Christophsis. And try as he might, he couldn't imagine an end to that dreadful feeling. Buyer's remorse. The Battle of Geonosis had been a blooding, nothing more, a teasing taste of things to come. Since then, so many clone troops had fallen, most recently on Christophsis, in defense of a republic that hardly knew what to do with them, whose citizens, truth be told, didn't care very much that they were fighting and dying, provided the war was kept far away from their lives. On Coruscant, war was something to watch on the HoloNet news service, if there was nothing more entertaining to pass the time. Elsewhere, of course, things were somewhat different. He shifted in his Senate platform, restless, as Palpatine concluded his stirring address.
"And so, my friends, I ask you to join with me in congratulating the Jedi on their triumph. Their gritty determination to defeat our misguided brothers and sisters of the separatist movement stands as a monument to this august body's commitment, my commitment, to bringing this